to that 590 show. We are eagerly waiting to be joined by Richard Justice from MLB.com. The Bellman Automotive phone line is available at 855-282-8255. The text line at 855-282-8255. Richard has his great story up on MLB.com about, when was it, Tuesday, when that maniac from Belleville shot up that baseball practice. And then they ended up having that game the following day. Who knew that that the people in Congress were playing baseball? And that idiot tried to just randomly kill a bunch of people. They just found out they were people from Congress on the baseball field. He had no idea who they were. Went and got his gun and just started opening fire.
There's word that the bought the actual gun from St. Louis. That's not confirmed yet, but
that he bought the gun from here.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I mean, that would stand a reason.
Yeah. And he purchased it legally, so that person's not liable, I don't believe.
Well, I mean, yeah, there's that too. And they're also saying that they found a list on him. Apparently, he had a hit list.
Really?
Of people that he was wanting to go after. Yeah. I don't know if that's been confirmed or not, but I'm hearing rumors that there was a hit list on his person.
That's crazy.
Very. So Richard Justice has his great story about that on MLB.com. So we're hoping that he'll be joining us here momentarily on the Bellman Automotive phone line. They're also saying that in August they are going to have a players' weekend where they can, you know, wear the bright colored cleats if they want to. I guess if they're into Susan G. Komen or breast cancer research, they want to wear the bright pink or the bright blue for prostate cancer, like which I'm sure they're going to this weekend for Father's Day, that they can. And they can also wear nicknames on the back of their jersey. So I looked and see to find a list of what the greatest nicknames are in Major League Baseball history. Number one is no surprise. It's kind of lame, though. The number one is Babe Ruth. That's the number one. Number 38, though, is my personal favorite because this poor guy, this poor bastard, really. I mean, his first name is Johnny. Cool name, right? His last name is Dickshot, and is spelled exactly as it sounds, and his nickname is Ugly. So he's Johnny Ugly Dickshot. That's his name.
Great player, good name.
You trade for that name.
Great player, good name. I'm not saying I'd trade for it, but then again, I happen to be born with a fantastic nickname, so.
Well, yeah,
back
you're
up
lucky.
Off here. If my name was Pete Johnson, maybe I'm thinking about it. Of course, if my name was Pete Johnson, I'd have other nicknames to roll with.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean,
I didn't do that on purpose, I promise.
If you were alive today and that was your name, you'd be in the valley right now making porn.
Yeah, that's not a bad screen name. You're right. That's not a bad.
Tell me I'm
name.
Wrong.
You're not wrong.
Just
it's
use
not
your
not
name.
Bad, you would just use your name.
It's not a bad screen name.
You would show up. My name is Johnny Ugly Dickshot. No, right. It's not. Here it is. Here's my birth certificate. What more do you want?
I still think Raleigh Fingers is one of the is a top 10 baseball name of all time.
Raleigh Fingers is great.
It'll always be up there.
There weren't too many. I mean, I guess
Babe Ruth is a lazy answer.
Very lazy. Ozzie Smith. He was the wizard.
It's a good one.
Albert Pujols was the machine.
It's also a good one.
That's not bad.
It's a good Stan, post 2000s nickname, considering those are few and far between.
Stan the Man.
Of course.
Classic. Your top 10, Vince Coleman was Vincent Van Gogh.
Okay, makes sense. Get it, because Van Gogh, because he was fast.
Kenny Reitz, Zamboni. Pablo Sandoval was Kung Fu Panda. That's always a good one. This one always cracks me up because it seems like it's kind of a dumb nickname, but a lot of people like it. Fred McGriff, he was the crime dog.
Yeah.
McGriff the crime dog.
Yeah.
Fred McGriff. I'm sorry, but that is easily, like, with a bullet, easy, top 10 nickname of all time.
With the bullet.
McGriff the crime dog. No doubt for Fred McGriff. I'll tell you what, the Atlanta Braves fans don't do a lot of things right, but that's one of them.
Number 6, Kenny Rogers is the gambler.
Obviously.
Number 5, Jose Bautista, Joey Bats.
See?
Great nickname.
Oh, that's overrated.
Oh, no, I think that's a great nickname.
Joey Bats, come on now.
Number 4, Harry Davis is Stinky. Number 3, Ron Say is the Penguin.
Okay.
Number 2, William Ellsworth Hoy is Dummy Hoy. And number 1, we already talked about, Babe Ruth.
All right.
Willie Mays, Say Hey Kid. That's not a bad one.
Oh, that's what no one talks about. It's just, we can talk about nicknames all we want. there's no point. I mean, everyone knows that the NBA for about 20 years there had the best nicknames of all time. I mean, there's no doubt
Clyde
in anyone's mind.
Earl the Pearl, Air Jordan,
Iceman Gervin, Wilt the Stilt.
You had Karl Malone, the mailman. I've had Bob Ramsey on my program before, and I asked him the story about how they came up with the nickname for the mailman. And he said, hey, we were at Louisiana Tech, and we were nowhere on the sports map. And suddenly we get this generational player in Karl Malone, and we kind of had like a brainstorming idea of what to call him. And someone came up with the mailman because he delivers. And he goes, I get credit for the nickname. He goes, but it really wasn't my idea. I was just the one who said it on the air.
Now, obviously, he didn't get this logo. He didn't get this name until a little bit later. But Jerry West, the logo. I'm sorry, but that's a clean nickname. That is the definition. And I understand, like, there's all, you know, Jerry West is also a guy who, you know, he was Mr. Clutch. I like the old school ones because, you know, the Jerry West one that I love that no one ever talks about. But I literally, if you read it on, if you pick up anything about Jerry West, you'll see it. Zeke from Cabin Creek.
Yeah, you don't hear that one.
Yeah, that was one of Jerry West's nicknames when he was younger.
Well, I mean, look at Larry Bird. He's the Hick from French Lick.
Now, that's another one. Yeah, that's another great one. The Hick from French Lick. Obviously, we don't talk about it. I think it's kind of like Babe Ruth, where I guess it's kind of easy because it essentially became his name. But we don't, Magic Johnson.
Magic Johnson, obviously.
It works. That famous cover photo of him in the magician's tuxedo.
Oh yes,
spread eagled on the front of it. By the way, might as well you know, we mentioned the Hick from French Lick. We've mentioned Irvin Magic Johnson. 3-part 30 for 30.
I have not Lakers, watched Celtics. It. I plan to this
Berger,
weekend.
What do you? I mean, get on to this weekend, my friend. Because,
I plan to this weekend
because oh my lord! And by the way, I'm sure it's been framed this way. I'm surprised that after it originally aired that we didn't see literally article after article after article after article coming out and being like, after watching this 30 for 30, it tells me that there's always been super teams in the NBA and this one isn't that big of a deal. And it's I'm surprised I didn't see more of that because you watch it and when you start talking about, first of all, Red Auerbach has Larry Bird and Robert Parrish and Kevin McHale, and he's still landing the number one overall pick or the number two overall pick. Like when you realize that 86 Celtics team didn't even get to add Len Bias because he died, like that kind of stuff, and you realize what the Celtics had, not only when you had Jerry West adding Will Chamberlain and they still had Elgin Baylor, but you talk about the way that they had Kareem already and they just luck into the number one overall pick and they draft James Worthy.
I want to say Peter Vesci, our friend Peter Vesci, tweeted out something about like how after watching that, do people finally realize that the super team is not nothing new?
Yes, and I also saw.
But I mean, like, were those players, were they considered super? Like, do we consider them super teams now because of what they accomplished, as opposed to going into the season? Yeah, they're already a super team.
I think there's actually a line within the 30 for 30 where people point out, or it's pointed out how Boston and LA build their team. You know, I just said it. You know, the Lakers, despite being really good, find a way to bamboozle the number one overall pick out of I forgot who it was, and that gets them James Worthy. Same thing with Red Auerbach bamboozling the number one overall pick. He then trades it, and he gets Kevin McHale for third overall, and Kevin McHale's coming off the bench for the first couple of years. See, so people like to think that those super teams are more pure in a way because they were drafted that way, and while each of them has a big trade or a big free agent signing, they're not seen in the same way as LeBron James or Kevin Durant. You know, the Lakers, the Celtics have, you know, their big trade that they made was Robert Parrish. But the problem is when they traded for Robert Parrish, he wasn't Robert Parrish yet. He was a malcontent who wasn't very good yet.
Another player with a great nickname, the Big Chief.
Yeah, that's a good point. And then you have the Lakers. Now, their big signing, obviously, was Kareem, the biggest free agent signing really ever in sports to that day, and probably up until Reggie White would sign 15, 20 years later. So I think there's this perception that they built their teams the pure, like, right way, which is weird because up until Kevin Durant, undoubtedly, the first Warriors title was a super team that they built completely organically. And so, the first title, they did it the right way, and everyone loved them for it. And so, but obviously the Durant one, it gives you that feeling of the super team like LeBron.
I would say almost even last year, everybody still kind of loved Golden State. I think they were happy to see,
they were
happy to see LeBron win, but they were happy to see Cleveland win because for some reason, Cleveland was kind of like the sad, at least treated media-wise, like the sad sack city. Like, I've never seen a city that, you know, that wasn't...
It was like 13 months prior to them winning that is when the Believeland 30 for 30 comes out, and it paints them as these unbelievable losers, and they were.
Well, okay, but
I mean... The commercial
that LeBron had, all this outpouring of affection for Cleveland, like, I've never seen it before for a city that wasn't the victim of, like, a terrorist attack or a natural disaster. And then last year, or the when Cleveland finally won their NBA title against Golden State, I think Golden State was still kind of lovable that year. And then they signed Kevin Durant, and they went right from lovable to being hated in a matter of a signature on a contract. That's all it took. To me, the amazing thing or the fun thing about this Boston-LA rivalry in the 80s was how the teams reflected the attitude of those cities, too. You have this Boston team, and it was kind of like Boston, you know, blue-collar, kind of rough around the edges, fast-talking, trash-talking.
And they get to the other point also that everyone also started pointing out to Red and these guys like, hey, you're in Boston. Boston's known for not being very racially diverse. Hey, you're the only NBA team sitting there with 10 out of your 12 players are white guys. And they caught some flack for that one. Despite the fact that Red Auerbach coached the first ever starting black all-black five in the NBA. So... So you're right. That's another part about this documentary that is interesting is that they reveal they talk obviously as all 30 for 30s do about the social.
Oh sure.
And then you look at Los Angeles.
You look at the way the Lakers played, and that was like Los Angeles. It was flashy.
Here's the coolest part:
blitz glamour.
So you always have the narrator, right? And the narrator with 30 for 30s really dictates what happens.
It was Ice Cube for the Lakers, and it was Donnie Wahlberg for the Celtics.
So they split up the point of view and the narration. And they did it in a really fun. They did it in a really really fun way, I thought. But they also did it in a serious way that does kind of track at some of the issues that were going on. The funniest part is you're a St. Louis fan from the get go. One of the very first like 10 minutes they talk about the Bill Russell Ed McCauley trade. And the funniest thing is literally they talk about how Bill Russell didn't want to play in St. Louis because of Jim Crow and how racist St. Louis was. And then literally 20 minutes later they're talking about all the issues that Russell had to run into as being a black man in Boston. And I'm sitting here like, well, then it's just like, yeah. I'm not saying that he wasn't wrong about St. Louis, but it's not like Boston was that much better. It's a bummer. It's like, why couldn't people in St. Louis realize that racism was stupid about 50, you know, 40, or maybe 100 years earlier, but earlier, and run Bill Russell out of town because you idiots couldn't figure out what the hell was going on.
You're so happy
to get a white center. It's unbelievable. Oh, my God.
And you want to talk about the Celtics.
It makes me so mad.
Well, they're still like that, too. Look at the ovation that they gave Gordon Hayward.
Hayward,
when the Jazz were playing the Celtics in Boston.
Did he get a pretty big pop. But, okay, now, did they not cheer like that for Jimmy Butler at all during the regular season?
Not really. Not as much as they did for Gordon Hayward.
See, part of me thinks that it's not. I want to say that's because every fan in there knows that he could be a free agent. Target they go for. And while Jimmy Butler also could be, that's why I asked about Jimmy Butler. The problem is that Jimmy Butler is coming to Boston Garden in a Bulls uniform. While Gordon Hayward's coming in a Jazz uniform, I feel like as a Celtic fan, it'd be easier to get away with cheering for a Jazz who might become a Celtic than it is even a Bull. And I obviously
keep telling yourself that.
I'm aware of that.
I don't think even you're buying what you're selling.
I'm not saying that Boston people aren't happy that they might get Gordon Hayward, but every Boston fan I talk to also mentions how happy they would be to get Jimmy Butler.
Yeah, who do you think they'd be more happy with though? Look at that. Was a long sip of that Gatorade. That was a
so about that Lakers Celtics 30 for 30. I'll tell you what. The coolest thing is just seeing all those highlights.
I remember when I was a kid. This is when Michael Jordan first started getting in the league, and all of us kids, we all love Michael Jordan because he was the most fun to watch play. You know, the flying through the air and the dunks and all that. And everybody who was older, they were all, you know, either Magic Johnson or Larry Bird fans, and they all said the same thing. Oh, Michael Jordan will never win a title. He's a ball hog. He shoots too much. Yeah, it's amazing how
it's cyclical. Wonderful how history repeats itself.
It's amazing how cyclical everything is.
Well, I mean, don't forget, 10 years ago, LeBron was never going to win a title.
Oh, yeah.
Let's not forget that. LeBron was the most unclutch, un-big-time player ever. He passed the ball in the big moments too often. He was never going to win a title.
Yeah, Jordan never would have passed the ball, even though he passed the ball to John Paxson and Steve Kerr all the time. But Everybody kind of seems to forget all that stuff. You know, Michael Jordan, he, you know, walked across Lake Michigan to get to a game and never missed a free throw.
You brought and you brought up Peter Vesci, by the way. Somebody, I couldn't remember who it was. I saw a picture, and it was a Sports Illustrated cover, and it's Michael Jordan holding a ball above. Like a jumping
Peter Vesci did tweet
tiny little Shaquille O'Neal and tiny little Muggsy Bogues, and it's Are the Bulls Ruining the NBA?
Yeah.
Amazing how it happens. Nothing changes.
Let's quickly go to DD. We got to get to you real quick because we got to get to commercial break and then get to Jay Randolph Jr. What's on your mind?
Rocky, not much has changed from what you just said about LeBron. He's still unclutch. He's still
wrong. Just get out of here. The guy's got three titles since we were talking about him like that. Get off his jock there, D. The guy's won three.
We don't have the time to debate him right now. We'll save that for another hour.
Are you just gonna come in here and bash on LeBron and walk out? That's a drive by bashing on LeBron James, D. It was uncalled for. All right. I know you're a Celtics fan. Who do you want, Gordon Hayward or Jimmy Butler?
I'd say Hayward.
I think I would take Hayward too because I mean he's got the outside shooting and that's what you need.
I don't know.
Exactly what we need.
Butler can shoot from outside, but he's a much better defensive player.
Okay, you're right about that, but you have to score, and Butler can't score.
What are you talking?
That's right.
About?
You're definitely right. And hey, real quick, I know you got to go, but if you say anything else bad about Ferris Bueller's Day Off, that's an iconic, legendary movie.
I did not say a thing bad about Ferris Bueller's Day Off, D.
He just hates Back to the Future and The Karate Kid.
Oh, well, I ain't going to argue with him on those two. Ferris Bueller's Day Off, oh, man, that's a legendary movie right there, man.
So far.
Hatred of the Lakers and great movie knowledge. D, you're just one of the smartest people out there in St. Louis. I'll tell you that right now.
So far, he has not bashed any John Hughes movies.
That's why. Not yet. That's why I like listening to you guys. Y'all have a good day.
You too, D. Have a great weekend.
Jimmy Butler. He just wrapped up his third straight year of scoring 20 points a game. This year he scored 24 points a game on 45% shooting from the field, and he shot 37% with over three threes per game. Do not tell me that Jimmy Butler cannot score.
He's not a good shooter. Let me change that.
He is an above average shooter.
He's just okay.
He's an above average shooter. 37% on three a game. That's not bad at all. It's not Stephen Curry levels, but that is a level that you can still be a scorer, a number one scorer in today's league if you're shooting like that.
Let's take a commercial break, and then coming up on the other side, we're going to be joined. I'm not a Melo fan at all. Let's take a commercial break, and then on the other side, we're going to be joined by Jay Randolph Jr. talking about the U.S. Open. You're listening to That 590 Show right here on 590 The Fan, 105.7 HD2 FM, and InsideSTL.com. I'll rent a beach house in Miami.